Professor of Law from Washington University School of Law.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you, Senator, for inviting me for the I have to push. Okay. Thank you to everyone for allowing me the opportunity to again address the task force. And today to speak to you about the issue of transfer or waiver to adult court. And like so many people in this room, I very much look forward to the day when, in fact, kids are not being transferred at all to adult courts, jails, and prisons. But I'm also a legal realist, and I know that sometimes you have to approach these things somewhat realistically. So I wanted to talk with you about five amendments that I would recommend to the task force as it looks at the current Missouri transfer laws and provisions. First is to add a requirement that the juvenile officer or prosecutor, as I call them, must demonstrate probable cause before a youth is transferred to adult court. Second, to clarify that the burden should be on the juvenile officer or prosecution to demonstrate the need for transfer in each case. Third, to abolish mandatory transfer hearings under our current law. Fourth, to raise the age for those youth who are subject to transfer. It's currently 12 years of age. And fifth, for this task force to please consider the possibility of reverse waiver, particularly in cases where the matter is reduced from the high-level charge that it begins with once it reaches adult court. So let me take these five matters in turn, if I may. Missouri is an outlier in its current transfer practice in that it contains no requirement in the current statute for a finding of probable cause, or as it's sometimes called, prosecutive merit. I provided the task force with a handout that was put together a few years ago by one of our students that looked at the state of Missouri's statute for transfer and compared it to the statutes of all other states. And as you can see, 37 states, as I recollect, have a requirement that the prosecution or the juvenile officer demonstrates actual probable cause before a case is sent from juvenile court to the adult court system. It makes us an extreme outlier. The history of this, you know, if you care, there was a case called Kent. The United States Supreme Court decided that transfer proceedings are very important matters, essentially the death penalty of juvenile court. And due process standards were considered very important, and the Supreme Court held that certain procedures needed to be provided consistent with due process 14th Amendment norms. As part of that decision, there was an addendum which came to be seen as model provisions around transfer, a list of considerations for courts to use when considering transfer. And that list, it seems, was adopted by those 37 states. We also adopted that list. However, we struck the one component relating to actual weight of the charge, or is there enough evidence to go forward with this case. What makes this especially problematic here is two other things that take place in Missouri law. Number one, we have a set of rules relating to transfer, separate from the statute, juvenile court rules, which in their commentary actually preclude anyone from presenting information relating to probable cause or prosecutive merit at the time of transfer. Some say it's there to sort of protect the child and not prejudice the proceedings, but those of us who do the work think it is certainly important, usually, for there to be enough evidence against the child before you decide to send them off to adult court. It's not a matter of prejudice to introduce that kind of evidence or be permitted to challenge that kind of evidence. The other thing that takes place in Missouri law that makes us an extreme outlier is that at the front end of our cases, by statute, there is no requirement currently that a case needs to get screened for probable cause. Now, 30 years ago, the Eighth Circuit said that, yes, our juvenile courts do need to be providing probable cause hearings, some kind of screen in a hearing, not behind closed doors, to challenge probable cause. However, our statute was never amended to take that holding, that very important holding, into account. So across the state, I should be careful. In the courts I've practiced in, has not been historically the practice to allow for a probable cause hearing at the front end of the case, right? And so what you have then is the possibility of cases that have not been screened on the front end for weight of the evidence, have not been screened at the certification stage, being dumped into the adult system. And then you can have cases that shouldn't have been in the adult system in the first instance sort of stuck there because essentially once an adult, always an adult. And if a young person is then offered a plea offer once they're in adult court, they might take it just to avoid the greater harm. So it's very important from the defense counsel standpoint for there to be some screen around the weight of the evidence to ensure that bad cases or cases that are not sufficiently supported or not are not put into the adult system. Second, I would ask for the
professor.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Do you mind if we ask questions about each topic before
Absolutely.
You proceed?
Yeah.
On the issue of once an adult, always an adult, I thought that we had amended that. Was that not an across the board with the Jonathan's Law that we passed?
It is.
Or?
It's a halfway fix.
Okay.
You know? And so I think there are instances, and this also gets into reverse waiver. So if, let's say, someone is certified up on a felony, but then it's dealt with, suddenly it becomes a misdemeanor up in adult court, then you're not going to have, they are still always an adult on a misdemeanor, right? At least my reading of Jonathan's Law. And so perhaps I see Mr. Decker turning his head, and maybe I'm wrong.
You know, my understanding of it is that if Jonathan's Law specified that if they're waived to adult court and they're not convicted, that then on a subsequent charge they could be considered a juvenile.
But if they are convicted or if they plead guilty, then they would be. Okay,
yeah,
I see what you're saying.
Just of a lesser offense.
And she's okay.
A lesser offense would also be a reason to have a guilty.
Yeah. Right, so you could certify up, you could sort of frame it or charge it as a more serious case to permit for it to be transferred, but then under current law, just because it, well, if it were to then be dealt with as a misdemeanor, seen as a misdemeanor based on the weight of the evidence, that youth is still in adult court, still always an adult, at least under Jonathan's Law as I read it. There's no automatic reverse waiver, and because there was no... it's already been
okay.
sent out of the juvenile court system.
And then the other question that I have about your point number one, I know that we don't certify near as many children as we did in the 90s, for instance.
Right.
Do we have any sense of how many kids are certified and then the prosecutors dismiss the case because of lack of probable cause or anything? Do we have any sense of those numbers?
I don't currently have those numbers. I do, in the Law Review article that I wrote, The Other Missouri Model, I do have numbers, as I recollect, from 2009 out of St. Louis City, and half of the cases that were certified, ultimately there was issues relating to weight of the evidence, and so, as I read it, and that those half of those cases didn't proceed as adult cases. Now, some people might say, well, great, and then the problem solved, right, because the cases got dismissed once they got to adult court. But think of the months that may have gone into that case where a youth was incarcerated and dealt with as someone who's facing the possibility of prison time. I'm not suggesting at this point we're talking hundreds of cases since we know that there's about 75 a year, but even if it's 5, 10, 15 youth, I think it's an important consideration.
No, and I understand that because I see that on the end where I handle things, which is the juvenile delinquency side of things, and the lack of a probable cause hearing has caused, for instance, clients of mine who are picked up through some kind of extreme measures, held for over a month, including, you know, long holiday periods where the courts are closed and that sort of thing. And then the night before trial, they realize they don't have the testimony or the testimony's bad, and so they just dismiss the case. Meanwhile, this kid has missed a month of school. They were not, and it wasn't just a technicality. I mean, these kids were, you know, swept up in a big, you know, and so I just think that that's a problem in general. And so a month of a kid being out of school and away from their family is too long. So
thank you.
I guess my question, I don't know if Decker would be able to answer this or not. I understand the Jonathan's Law side of that, at least I hope I would. But as far as being, once you're an adult, let's just say that you're not convicted.
Right.
Let's just say that, you know, you're found to be innocent.
Right.
But then,
well, that, what you just said is very important.
Yeah, you're found to be innocent, so does that drop off then as far as you get to go back to being a kid in the eye of the law?
Well, I think...
And commit another crime? Do you have to be re-adjudicated as an adult?
I think there's a little bit of a gap in Jonathan's law, at least as I read it, this distinction that you just drew between being found innocent, which is an acquittal, right? You've gone to trial and you've been acquitted versus a case just being dismissed. And I'm not sure under current Jonathan's law provisions, and maybe others can speak to this, that in the instance of an acquittal, that that is true. You are now back to square one. You are in a juvenile, and if you get a new charge, you're dealt with in juvenile court. If a case is just dismissed under the current Jonathan's law provisions, again, I have to look more carefully, but I, last reading, I felt like I was left with the impression that there was a question mark there.
Well, I think that question mark is, too, though, because just because the evidence isn't there doesn't mean you didn't commit the crime. But if you were acquitted by 12 jurors or however it were, you know, whoever's involved in the acquittal.
Right. But
then you were acquitted.
Right. But if there was an appropriate probable cause screen on the front end, it might be that, sure, there was some suspicion, but it wasn't sufficient to get you into an adult court setting. And so I think given... giving youth the benefit of the doubt under those circumstances is the appropriate avenue. And so it would assist in ensuring that borderline cases don't suddenly wind up someone forever facing the possibility of, even if they're innocent, getting offered a plea offer to resolve the case to avoid 40 years and some kid saying, yeah, I'll take 10.
You want me to, I can respond quickly. I think, and we should check between meetings the exact language, but I think Jonathan's law said, if not, as long as they're not subsequently convicted, then they're not still considered an adult. So I think it would cover both circumstances you're talking about, but not the third circumstance where there was some sort of plea to a lesser offense. If there's still a plea agreement or a conviction, I think they would be once an adult, always an adult.
If it does that, then that's my error. I mean, I haven't had any youth go through it yet, but as I recollected there was some question, but maybe
I think
I'm wrong.
I think it's also worth considering, though, from a legal standpoint, the lesser included offense is always nested within the greater offense. I mean, if the charge is robbery in the first degree, a jury can always come back and deliver a guilty verdict in robbery in the second degree. I mean, it's included within the greater charge from a legal standpoint. So just because there's a plea down to a lesser charge, or a jury conviction on the lesser charge, doesn't mean in some way that wasn't within the scope of the greater charge to begin with.
So this isn't the typical red light ticket or speeding ticket drop down to a muffler violation type.
Right, and I'll talk some about that in terms of lesser included and nested as we proceed. So on the second issue, burdens, right now our statute and rules don't indicate who has what burden and by how much. And so at the hearing, sometimes it feels like a bit of a hodgepodge collage, what factors are considered, by what weight, who has the burden of going forward. And so since it is a prosecution, as in many states, it would be my position that the statute should make clear that the prosecution is on the movement, the person who's seeking certification to demonstrate the need for transfer by some sufficiently high level of proof. Right now, it leaves the court kind of guessing and in a real gray area in terms of what is supposed to be considered and by how much. When is this a right case to relinquish juvenile court jurisdiction? And if there were greater clarity around this, I think you might see more reviews on appeal relating to certification, something we very, very seldom see now because there are no standards, true standards, by which to measure whether a court has abused its discretion. And so setting forth clearly and straightforwardly that there is a burden, that it is on the prosecution or the juvenile officer, and that it is by a high standard would be an appropriate step in the right direction. Third, as to mandatory hearings, the current provisions under our statutory scheme that require mandatory certification hearings are simply inconsistent with the Supreme Court of the United States teachings around adolescent development and the need for individualized assessment of culpability and amenability to rehabilitation. It's also inconsistent with essentially the orientation and ethos of our juvenile court system, which again is focused on the individual child. It also fails to account for that a child is generally more than their worst act alone. It makes an assumption solely on the charge that we need to have a hearing relating to certification. It also ties the hands of the prosecutor or juvenile officer. I have worked in the city of St. Louis, and to me, I sometimes have felt like the juvenile officers did not want to have to go forward, and even in the county, did not want to have to go forward with a certification case, but under the law were required to do so and could not exercise discretion not to file a motion. And this happens, let me give you an example of a pretty extreme case, but I think something that probably happens more than just in this one matter we handled. But a young man who had no prior record whatsoever, a very good student, ROTC and the like, charged with having a few bags of marijuana at school, mandatory certification case requiring the consideration of his placement in adult court and possible years of prison time. Now, at the end of the day, that case was resolved with a misdemeanor in juvenile court, but the trauma, the drama, the impact that had on that child and family is really hard to describe. And so to, in those instances, require a hearing to threaten a youth with this kind of death penalty of juvenile court sanction is inappropriate. Oh, there's also the statutory interpretation problem under our current mandatory provision. So the second part of our certification law that talks about mandatory certification allows it in, or requires it in certain circumstances, one of which is whether there were two prior unrelated felony offenses. And there is a great deal of confusion, or more recently seems like there's a great deal of confusion around what that means. And so there are some judges who are essentially requiring the juvenile officers before them to proceed on cases even where there may have been no finding of guilt previously, right? And so there is the possibility of youth facing mandatory certification in some places where there wasn't a prior finding and someone just says, well, the offense was committed, but we just didn't prove it. And that just seems wholly unfair and inappropriate to suddenly have an enhancement based on a situation where there was no prior finding. And so the easier course, the wiser course would to be to have a essentially the first half of our certification statute, which allows for permits filing certification in the most egregious type cases. Fourth, I would recommend that we raise the age, given that right now we allow for 12-year-olds to be certified to our adult courts and prisons. I think you've already heard from Vivian Murphy or Will about the 13-year-old who is in Sedalia right now, and I know some about that case as well, and it's a really striking instance of what many, even man-on-the-street folks, I think would say is unfair, even when there are serious crimes, even where there are victims impacted, and not to take anything away from victims, but 13-year-olds are simply not adults. And so I would urge consideration of raising the age to a more appropriate cutoff. Again, I would say 18, but if we're not there yet, we're not in my utopia yet. I know that 14 and 15 is being talked about. In terms of 15, I mean, on the one hand, I think it is, I don't find it to be particularly rational, but in our current system, we do have a 15-year-old cutoff. We do have a post that we can sort of point to as a measure in our muni court system. We allow for kids at 15 to be charged in muni court versus juvenile court. So that might reflect some understanding that in Missouri, we see 15 as a line that we divide our older youth and our younger youth. Reverse waiver. So talking some about these cases where someone might be facing certification on a very serious felony and then suddenly be found guilty of a lesser felony or a misdemeanor, I would submit that it would be appropriate in those instances for the young person to be back in juvenile court. Through Jonathan's Law and dual jurisdiction, we have what I call a special reverse waiver provision. It's a special provision that allows for reverse waiver in limited circumstances in the course of that kind of proceeding. But there are other cases where it seems like automatic return to juvenile court would be appropriate. Because if we are to limit our certification statute to only the most serious offenses, and then once we're in adult court, that offense has not been proven, it would seem appropriate to say, hey, this is someone who, if left in, it should have been left in juvenile court in the first instance. That this case, if it was pled appropriately, if it was pled with not just probable cause in mind, but what can be proved at trial, it would have never left, should have been resolved in juvenile court. And other states have those kinds of provisions. California is one that allows for, if there's a finding or a plea to a lesser charge than the certifiable offense, well, then we need to deal with that young person as a juvenile. So those are all of my recommendations. And, you know, last time I spoke to this group, it was before events in Ferguson. And I think I'd be remiss to not just pause and note that, you know, this, I think, provides us with a real opportunity in the face of that tragedy to become, again, a leader in juvenile justice instead of having the world watching us while various Department of Justice investigations are underway, and for this task force to maybe serve as a leader in that, to get in front of these issues and speak up and step up and address some of these provisions to demonstrate that Missouri can do the right thing on its own and to take that crisis and turn it into an opportunity. So unless there's questions.
Before we go to questions, Megan actually, thank you, Megan, brought to me the language for Jonathan's Law that we were talking about, and it is silent on the issue of dismissals and any other scenarios. What we have is it specifically says that when the child is certified to stand trial as an adult, it only reverts back to juvenile status if they are found not guilty. So it is very specific to that language, and it's not, it looks like the statute is completely silent on any other scenario.
And I'll say, there's a young man right now doing a 50-year sentence who, as I recollect, it was... There was an issue as to his initial charge being he got transferred to adult court and it was reduced to a misdemeanor and he was forever then an adult, you know, and he never sort of had the opportunity to remain a juvenile in juvenile court, and instead he's doing a 50-year sentence right now.
How long?
I'm sorry?
How long?
50.
50?
What was his crime?
I think it was a homicide, but it may have been... an attempted homicide. I don't recall.